Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Chirac-Rod here with Dr. Joe Palmer, Dr. Ersin Religioso. And joining us today, continuing our tradition of some excellent guests over the last several months, I would say, is Sue Falsoni. And that's Falsoni that Ersin and I recently learned, not Falsone. So from the get-go, I think it's already an informative podcast. But we'll keep going. So Sue, you've been doing a ton of stuff, and I'm sure most people listening to this podcast will know who you are. But we'll give them a refresher anyway. So I'm actually curious. What is the first thing? What would you say the first big project you started after school or just practicing for a little bit?
Gosh, you know, that's a great question. I mean, after I left,
thank you. Get used to it.
It's just going to be one great question another.
That's what we do here.
After I left PT school and then went to grad school to get my, athletic training, certification, I'd moved out to Arizona on a complete whim with a friend of mine that I grew up with, and we wanted to move somewhere. Our requirement was warm and sunny. And so that pretty much left Florida, Arizona, and California. And so we chose Arizona and I moved out here. We pulled off of the first exit that said Phoenix City Limits and, got an apartment and whatnot. And I read an article on Nomar Garcia Parra and that he trained with a man named Mark Verstegen. And at the time, Mark had just built the first facility in Phoenix or in Tempe, Arizona, and just went over there and basically volunteered for a few months and just stuck around until basically Mark would give me a job, and so he
nice.
Finally did.
Good technique.
And, so, I just hung around until he was like, okay, she's not going to go away, so. Finally gave me a job. I was Mark's seventh employee back in the day. And that was kind of really, obviously my schooling, my first job in the clinic in Raleigh, and then obviously my time at UNC, obviously all set the foundation. But, kind of taking a chance out in Arizona, it was it was a small company of seven people with large aspirations that have obviously fulfilled themselves 1,000 times over, and was just really cool to kind of be a part of it in the beginning. So I guess that's probably, would be my first sort of big project that I kind of walked into, right place at the right time.
So what led you to sports? What enticed you, or what was the, the foundational pool for sports, or is it just just like you felt like, oh, hey, you know what, we're going to work with athletes, or I want to work with athletes?
Yeah, I left PT school and I took my first job at a place that I'd done an internship with, at an office in Raleigh, North Carolina. And, it was a great clinic. The owners were unbelievable. My colleagues were unbelievable, just absolutely made the best friends that I still speak to this day. But as far as like patient population, and our patient population was great, but overall, a lot of workman's comp stuff, a lot of low back, a lot of cervical spine stuff, and sort of any of the quote unquote fun patients that, came in, sort of the younger high school or collegiate athletes with ankle sprains or knee injuries, I sort of had to pass them all off to the athletic trainer. And so then after about a year, I realized, well, she gets to work with all the cool patients and I want to do that. So I talked with her about it and looked into the double major program that UNC had had at the time. And it sort of went from there. So I guess it, you know, it took me a little bit to realize that that sports was where I wanted to focus, but, you know, definitely had to set. And I think that sometimes what students forget, you know, when they tell me that they want to get into sports medicine, I always tell people, like, sports medicine is a specialty of orthopedics. Like, you have to have an unbelievable foundation in orthopedics, which that first clinic job definitely gave me. So it was good. But yeah, ultimately, you know, that's where my interest was, and had that opportunity to do some grad work at UNC. And so I took it, and that's kind of really where it began.
I think that's a great point. We have a lot of DPT students that listen. Shout out, hashtag DPT student. Hashtag, that's going to be going on a lot today. So I think the point is it's when you have, you know, in your mind, when you set that this is a cool patient, you know, when you have a subset of patients that you that come to see you and you're like, oh, this is a cool patient, or you look forward to treating that patient. I think that's kind of like that gut feeling of this is a population that I want to treat. And that's kind of the passion that I think most people don't really follow. It just becomes a subset of patients that you look forward to treating versus actually doing that and finding where that population usually is. And in your case, it was athletes, and sounds like you took off from that.
Yeah, and that's important. Yeah. That's important, Gene, because if you get much more satisfaction if you feel like you're doing what you do best every day. And I think that the when you're interested in a patient population, that's what you do best, you know, that's who you treat and put the most effort into.
Definitely. Or not, you know, or not a patient population. Maybe you wake up in the morning and you look forward to doing the business aspect or the marketing or the branding for your company. And, you know, you still see a few patients here and there just to maintain your revenue stream or maintain your skills or something like that. But that's not something you look forward to, which is okay. I mean, you don't have to look forward to treating patients and still be a good clinician, but you know, kind of figure out what your passion is and follow that if you can, and you might end up like Sue.
I think this segues into what you said about working with athletes, and I think we've all had DPT students basically say, hey, I want to work with athletes. And I think what they mean by saying they want to work with athletes is they want to work with motivated, fit people, or just in general, people who will listen to what they have to say. And I think they automatically assume that every athlete is going to listen and they're just going to be more compliant. And obviously, those are the pluses, and we all know the pluses of working with athletes. But what would you say are drawbacks working with collegiate level and professional athletes versus the general population?
Sure. Yeah. No, there's drawbacks to everything, right? And you always have to just weigh what you love and your passion versus some of those drawbacks. And, you know, some of the things that are pluses are also drawbacks, you know, like, I mean, travel is a great example. Like, I love traveling. I get to travel the world and get to see a lot of different cultures and get to see how people all over the world treat different injuries and different illnesses. But at the same time, you know, I'm away from home a lot. And so, you know, depending on the day, that's a plus or a minus. You know, I think that there is, you know, a lot of pressure when you're not that every single person obviously is worth, you know, millions of dollars in their own right. But yeah, when you're, you know, I read a lot of articles about how bad I sucked at my job when I worked for the Dodgers. And, you know, having your career and having your life kind of out there for everybody to criticize is definitely a minus. But as of now, it's a plus, right? Because what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So definitely gain some strength from that experience. And, you know, it just sort of is all a yin and yang. It's all just a give and take. And so the negatives turn into positives and vice versa.
And it's also a mindset. I mean, at the time, I'm sure it was, regardless of how confident or how strong you are, when you have consistent negativity thrown your way, I mean, human nature, it's going to be tough. But it's, you know, some people get through it and come out on top like yourself, and some people don't. But, you know, it's all part of the experience and your journey of your evolution as a professional and as a person.
Yep, for sure, for sure. And it's, yeah, you know, when you are dealing with a professional athlete, I mean, you know, a lot of times your decisions are, you know, being broadcasted across the ticker on SportsCenter. And, you know, it's really easy for us to be sitting in our living room sort of judging that sports medicine staff, or sort of, you know, giving our opinion about how we would handle that injury, you know, and when we're sitting in our living room, we don't have all those facts. So, you know, it's tough for the people on the other end that are managing those injuries. Cause you know, they've got to deal with some of that criticism. So
now, what if I'm watching from my office and judging, is that allowed?
Oh,
or?
Then it's totally different. Yeah, no, it's totally different. Then.
Okay. Okay. Just clarifying, just wanted to make sure. But to keep going with the sports setting and the students, Scott McAfee, at McAfee PT, he is a DPT student. And he was one of the three that was part of the Future Perspective podcast that we did a little bit ago. He asked, what advice would you give #DPT students interested in entering the sports setting?
I think that it's important for students specifically to recognize that sports medicine is a subspecialty of orthopedics. And so to really get a solid foundation in orthopedics, I think is something that is really undervalued and sort of overlooked. As students are kind of coming out of school, you know, that first clinic I worked in was a super high volume clinic. You know, I saw hundreds of low back pain patients and a ton of extremity patients and post-ops. And so really got to kind of see what a normal rehab looked like. So that way when things come in your office or your training room that aren't normal, they're really easy to identify. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of value in that, and having that unbelievable foundation in orthopedics just can't be skipped over if you're going into sports medicine.
So we also just mentioned, we were just talking about sports a little bit ago in professional sports. You were part of professional sports. We didn't really clarify that. If you could just tell everyone which team you were on and how you got to that point, I think that might help them out as well.
Yeah, right now. Currently I'm the head of athletic training and sport performance for the U.S. men's national soccer team. And that is coming off of a wonderful sabbatical year of not doing a whole heck of a lot. And
awesome.
That came after, 2 years of being the head athletic trainer for the Los Angeles Dodgers, which, was a really, really cool experience. I was a consultant or part-time, clinician with them for 4 years, and then was the head athletic trainer for two, and just had some really, really interesting experiences during that time.
Can you share any of those?
Yeah, you know, I think that it just sort of depends what you're talking about. I mean, I got to meet some unbelievable people, right? Like, you know, when you get to talk to Sandy Koufax or, you know, just some amazing players that, and amazing people. I mean, forget about being players, but just sort of had the opportunity to talk to some of those guys that, you know, kind of played back in the day and kind of learned some old lessons from them was always sort of cool. And, you know, a lot of the travel and, you know, the ability to be in an NLCS, like, you know, not many people can say they've experienced that. And so, you know, all those were just some really, really amazing experiences that that you just, you know, are probably unrepeatable.
Yeah, that's really cool. How did you make it to the Dodgers? What was that? What was your journey to get tied in with them?
I was working, as I said earlier, with Athletes Performance. I joined them in 2001, and I think it was 2007 or 8. The Dodgers had approached Athletes Performance to help them create some solutions for their organization across the board, and kind of became my project, so to speak. And Stan Conte came on board, I believe, in 2009. I might have a couple of my years off a little bit. But, you know, Stan came on and we sort of started working closer together, and my role sort of organically grew over the years, to the point then that he asked me to be the head trainer in 2012. So that's really kind of how it started, was through Athletes Performance.
So with with Athletes Performance, did you actually have professional athletes coming to you? Did you go see professional athletes? How does that start, and how do you build the trust of professional athletes organizations to actually come in and train with you And to me, it seems like there's a big gap between starting something like that and getting a professional athlete to you. Whereas after that, you might have word of mouth. But how do you start something like that up?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was really, really difficult at times. You know, luckily Mark Verstegen had developed a great relationship with Nomar Garcia Parra, Jason Veritek, you know, a few different guys from the Red Sox when he was at Georgia Tech. And, you know, they followed him to, you know, Bradenton, Florida, and then here to Arizona, where he opened up Athletes Performance. And, you know, slowly that, that crew sort of grew. And, you know, then I kind of came in and, you know, sure enough, I was their first physical therapist. So, of course, the more a PT is around, the more things hurt people. so, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, I've had this knee pain. I've just been ignoring it. Can you take a look at things? And so, you know, that kind of grew in and of itself, like I said, to the point that Mark finally gave me a job. But, you know, it was really through his contacts. I mean, I had zero contacts in the professional world. And so, you know, you start to kind of create those relationships with people and then word of mouth happens. But yeah, I mean, it was tough at first, you know, when there were some guys that had major injuries, you know, a lot of athletic trainers in the league, you know, NFL, MLB, who, you know, are my colleagues now and were friends and colleagues, you know, back in the day were like, yeah, we don't know who she is. We're not going to, you can't do rehab with her. We're sending you to so-and-so. You know, and it was so frustrating for me. And I keep in touch with one of the athletes that their team wouldn't let him rehab with me. And it's funny to talk with him about it now. He's like, "See, I told you everything would be okay."
That's really interesting. I mean, that's what I was picturing. You know, that it'd be so close knit and a hard barrier to break with professional sports, and you know, build that trust and reputation with them. Seems like it's a big jump from zero to one, and then it might be easier. But
yeah, for sure, it's just like doing a pull up. Going from pull ups to one pull up is really, really hard, and going from 10 pull ups to 11 pull ups is not that bad. So you kind of just have to get that over that initial hump. And, you know, luckily I had some success with some of those early guys that I'd worked with, and they stood up for me too, you know, saying that they wanted to rehab with me and rehab at Athletes Performance and, you know, be with the strength and conditioning crew that we had there as well, and kind of get everything that they needed in one spot, you know, with the nutrition and the performance stuff and the rehab. And, so they really stuck to their guns too and, put their necks out for me. So it was, I just was happy to not let them down and, you know, do a good job for them, help them get back out on the field, and you know, and they kind of spread the word, which was really amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So in that same mindset, when you are dealing with all different practitioners, you know, doctors, strength and conditioning staff, athletic trainers, physical therapists, nutritionists, does everybody play well at that level? And do you find that it narrows your scope? You're both ATC and PT, but do you find that your scope is narrowed because of the specialists that come at the professional level?
No, not really. Because bottom line, I mean, if you're, it definitely depends on the setting that you work in as well. But if you're the head AT for a team, you know, you're really the gateway for everything, you know, as far as, you know, getting the athlete to the physicians and making sure they get their diagnostic tests and making sure they understand what the physician said to them and, you know, kind of all of that stuff. And so, you know, you're really just kind of become their advocate and you're really a part of sort of everything that they're dealing with. At least in my experience, it's kind of made it a larger role. Rather than a smaller role, you know. And I think that, yeah, in general, people play nice at that level. There's always, you know, people's egos involved depending on where you are and what you're dealing with. But, you know, I think for the most part, you know, people have the athlete's best interest in mind. And my philosophy is leave your letters at the door. You know, I don't care if you're an MD, a PT, an AT, I don't care what letters you have after your name. Like, our athlete's the priority. And what do we all bring to the table to get them back onto the field, you know, efficiently and ethically? And, you know, bottom line, that's what it comes to. So if I have the ability to sort of run that philosophy than, you know, than I do. And it's it usually most people want to work that way.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way to do it.
Yeah,
it's a fun way.
I did notice that 4 or 5 years ago when I started transitioning to seeing more athletes and taking more of, say, SFMA or FMS type courses, that the PT, there was PTs, ATs, MTs, they were all taking those courses, and versus the courses that only an orthotherapist would take, all there are PTs there. And if a DC or two happened to slip in, they were just the enemy. And it was just really refreshing to have everyone be a team player rather than everyone be at each other's throats and you don't want to share patients. In sports, they just seem to be team players. That's.
Yeah. You know, I think part of it is too, you know, when you're with a team, you know, and you're dealing, especially on the in-season level, I mean, you know, you're with each other, gosh, in baseball, it's 162 games in 183 days, and that doesn't count spring training or playoffs. And so, you know, your eyes kind of start to sort of blur over, right? When you're looking at the same person over and over and over again, you kind of, your eyes tend to go to what you think is, you know, about that athlete, right? And so sometimes it's really nice to have a fresh perspective from somebody. And so to be able to share that athlete with different clinicians and get different perspectives, at least for me, was really, really helpful, because it's really easy to just sort of, you know, on day, you know, 150, be like, oh yeah, we're dealing with the same thing we've been dealing with. You know, and that's not always the case. So, you know, fresh eyes and that team approach, I think is just a really, really nice way to sort of kind of just make sure everybody's staying on their toes and looking at things from a fresh perspective.
Speaking of a fresh perspective, we have another question on Twitter from Ben Fung, at Dr. Ben Fung, who was our previous guest. Shout out. He asked, what is the biggest opportunity that you see in physical therapy industry for the rest of 2015?
Ooh, for the rest of 2015. The biggest opportunity for the PT profession?
Yes.
Wow.
I know. Get your crystal ball out. Let's hear it.
Question. I know. Seriously. You know, I don't know if this is accurate or not.
We'll go with
my opinion, I will say. We'll go with my accurate opinion.
Yes.
You know, I was lucky to be a part of when Heidi Janenga hosted what was called Rehab Nation last year. And, you know, she brought together about a dozen clinicians from all walks of PT life and to kind of just discuss, you know, PT as a whole. And I thought one thing that was really interesting was sort of the definition. Like if you say, you know, well, what does a PT do? You know, there's not like a solid definition, right? Because it depends on, well, if you work in pediatrics versus geriatrics versus sports medicine, what a PT does is really, really different. You know, so to kind of come up with that definition of who are we as a profession, and to really clarify that, and not only to clarify it, but to really have the public understand what it is that we can do to be, you know, to be a primary entry into the healthcare system, you know, I think is huge. And I think that unawareness in the community is still present. And I think if, you know, as an organization and as a profession, we can, you know, begin to kind of dispel some of those myths and really sort of clarify to the public, what is it that physical therapists do and what can they do for you? Especially as a primary entry into the healthcare system, you know, I think that's really important.
Yeah, there's always, I think that's one of the biggest conversation starters and, points of contention is what is physical therapy. And you know, there's still that subset that will say it's very much hands-on, and which you can talk about as well with the dry needling. There's another subset that says it's very much neuro. Then there's another one that says it's all movement, all exercise, and you know, it's kind of everyone is you know, for their corner, you know, it's kind of clicked out versus everyone coming together and saying, well, why not all the above? You know, why not combine right. Musculoskeletal expert with neuro expert? Because it's all movement. Yes. You know, I think everyone can agree that it's all controlled by the brain. And and spinal pathways and all that fun stuff, and neurotransmitters, and just the science of the body. And research is good, absolutely. Evidence-based is great. But I think, you know, clinical reasoning is evidence-based with experience, combining the two, and experience should guide the evidence, you know, make it relevant to you and your clinic and the way you treat, versus just, you know, being a robot and following evidence. So it, right. It's finding that middle ground and being a well-rounded clinician. I think that's what it would be if there's such a thing as a well-rounded clinician.
I wanted to know, I'm Kinetochore trained, so basically, and the more I do it, the less I want to search and destroy for trigger points. And a couple of my colleagues have taken your courses, and they say that they're very pattern-based, and you know, you actually did find a trigger point on one of my colleagues at one of your courses, and he said, wow, you know, what a difference between, you know, he was dropping F-bombs versus just needling patterns to improve movement.
And the opposite of that, Joe and I were trained by MyoPain seminars, and which is very much trigger point based.
The dry needling thing, I try to compare it, you know, as Gene and I were talking offline earlier, I just compare it to manual therapy, right? Like, are we really going to have a debate about Stanley Parris being a better physical therapist than Brian Mulligan, you know, or Ola Grimsby, you know, or Shirley Sarman? Of course not. They're all fabulous. They're all fantastic. Their techniques are effective. They're, you know, it all works. And it just is dependent on what resonates with you as a clinician, right? And so same thing with dry needling. There are so many different techniques and so many different theories out there. They're all valuable. They all are effective. They all work. It's just what really resonates with you as a clinician and how, you know, what resonates with your patients and how you treat people. And, you know, I chose to study with Dr. Ma for several reasons. I mean, number one, he's a traditional acupuncturist from China. And so, you know, he has that background as well. He has his PhD, you know, from America, you know, in the United States in neurosciences and neuroanatomy. So, you know, who better than to kind of combine, you know, the ancient Eastern practice with, you know, modern day Western medicine. And so, you know, to really be able to look at what's happening from a neurophysiological level, you know, Dr. Ma is just, it's just brilliant when it comes to that stuff. And so I chose to learn, you know, to learn from him, and he really looks at the body as a whole, which I do. And I'm not saying that the other techniques don't. I'm just saying from me and my experience with Dr. Ma, and my experience as a clinician, you know, if someone's elbow hurts, you know, I don't treat their elbow. I mean, of course I treat their elbow, but I also look at their shoulder. I look at their thoracic spine. I look at their lumbar spine. I look at their hips, right? And I kind of look at them as a whole. And so why would my dry needling practice be any different? You know, I don't treat trigger points typically, only trigger points, you know, within my own personal practice. So my dry needling shouldn't be any different. And so to kind of take the systemic approach from a dry needling standpoint, which is what my class is called, you know, systemic dry needling for sport performance, just resonated with me, and it resonated with how I treat people and fits within my treatment paradigm.
Yeah, it's, you know, the systemic is, I think it's the means, it's the end of the means, you know, needling or manipulations or whatever else. To me, that's the means to justify the end, and the end is the function, whatever. First of all, you have to define what function means, but, you know, restoring whatever the person needs restored, whether it's movement, gait, just, you know, having them live their life the way they want to live life. That's our end goal for our patients or customers or clients, whatever you want to call them. It's us doing what we can to make their lives better based on what they tell us, right? It's not us just following textbook and this is what this needs to be, this is what this needs to be. It's what they need it to be. And, you know, that's the systemic approach, and that's kind of putting it all together for that. And I feel like that gets lost in the shuffle sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. You know, with any technique, do. And so, you know, from a dry needling perspective, that's how I approach it. I mean, I love teaching my class. Dr. Ma made this class specifically for me to teach. So I'm the only one in the country that teaches it, which is really exciting. You know, this part of his approach. And it fits really well, Frank Gargano, with integrative dry needling. He teaches Dr. Ma's first two classes, so the foundational class and the advanced class. He teaches those two, and then Dr. Ma created a specific third course for me, really, which is a really practical course. We get into cupping. We get into the utilization of electrical stim, you know, and we really kind of take it from a practical approach. And from an orthopedic and sport performance approach. So it's really exciting. It's exciting that it's sort of, you know, mine, not to be super egotistical.
Mine.
But
it's mine.
It's, you know, it's my course that I get to teach, and, you know, no one else is teaching it out there. So it's pretty exciting, and it's exciting, you know, to have Dr. Ma kind of put that faith and trust in me to spread that word. So it's kind of cool.
That's really cool. And another thing I want to ask you in a similar vein, although completely different, and again, you and I kind of talked a little bit about this before, which might be kind of odd coming from a three-guy podcast, but you being a leader in the field and develop, you know, having your own course and just doing a lot of really cool stuff, I feel like that's somewhat unique as a female, because whether it's my perception, which could be wrong, obviously. But, you know, we've had some really, really cool female guests, you know, from Stefania Bell to Sandy Hilton to Heidi that you mentioned, Jananga from WebPT. And I feel like when I look around, the you know, quote-unquote influencers in our field are very much heavily male, which to me is odd because medicine and especially physical therapy is so, you know, loaded forward with females. There's such a disproportionate amount of females compared to males. And yet, whether we just don't hear about it, whether or it's on Twitter, is it my perception, or do you see that as well?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that there's definitely statistics that support your opinion. You know, and Heidi's done a lot of research in that area and kind of really sort of tuned me into that, because, you know, quite frankly, prior to the whole Dodgers gig, I really had not thought about my gender as a plus or a minus in my career. It just sort of, it's like talking about my eye color. Like, I don't think, oh, my eyes are blue, so I can't do this. You know, so kind of same thing from a gender standpoint. And so, you know, until I really sort of had all that stuff happen with the Dodgers, you know, from a first female sort of thing, and then speaking with Heidi, you know, it's not equal for sure from a men and women standpoint when it comes to influencers within our profession. And, you know, I'm not sure why that is. You know, I don't know it, you know, I'll bring it up about, you know, the family thing, and, you know, we haven't figured out yet how to have, you know, men to have babies. So women are still the ones that are having babies.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Let's not
get into that.
But, you know, I mean, a lot of women, you know, do want to start families, and I think, you know, priorities shift from a career to a family, and, you know, and that's okay. And I just think that it, you know, for certain people, priorities at certain times in their lives are, you know, are obviously different, and that may have something to do with it. You know, it's, you do have to make some decisions, you know, as you go, you know, and Heidi and I have this debate, right? Cause she has a child and I don't. And, you know, we kind of talk about, you know, about the ability to sort of have it all, and how do women kind of have it all. And, you know, she, I don't want to speak for her, but, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I had to make some decisions along the way, and decisions that were right for me. And, you know, if I would have made some different family oriented decisions along the way, you know, maybe obviously my life would be unbelievably fulfilled if that's what I wanted. And so, but it would have been a different path. Right. So I think sometimes, females are the ones that are placed in that position to sometimes have to choose. And I think a lot of times, you know, we choose family. And, I think that may be one reason why we don't see as many female influencers, in our profession.
Yeah, that definitely could be. I mean, there's definitely that societal component to it. It's just, I don't know, I guess it's been after maybe talking with Heidi, and I just started looking, you know, as I was editing the podcast and just looking through a list of guests, and we did have, you know, we've had a good bit of really cool female guests, and I was just sitting back and thinking about it. I was like, you know, aside from you and Heidi, sent me a list of some other guests to reach out to that seemed really interesting. I just felt like there's just such a big disproportionate amount, and I was curious if it is that societal difference between females and males. I know there's still a lot of wage issues going on and things like that, but I don't know.
But yeah, you know, Heidi had me read that book, Lean In, from Sheryl Sandberg. And, you know, she definitely talks in that book about a lot of issues and a lot of things that almost embarrassingly as a female, I hadn't really thought about in my career path. Just, you know, my life has sort of laid itself out the way it is. And I hadn't really thought about some of those things. So it was a really, really interesting read that Heidi, you know, brought to light for me. And I'm glad she did. I definitely, you know, have some different opinions now from reading that book and kind of seeing some different perspectives.
Do you ever, you know, as you grew through the ranks and become a more prominent, you know, female leader, do you get the pressure of feeling like you need to reach out to more females and advocate and things like that?
Not really pressure. I, you know, as I said, my gender just wasn't something I ever considered throughout the early part of my career. And even now, as a barrier or an asset, it just was what it was. Right. And so, you know, I definitely have a lot of young women reaching out to me to ask questions about stuff like that and sort of how to navigate some of the good old boys club stuff. And, you know, I hope I'm giving honest advice and honest insight into what I've dealt with and into, you know, quite frankly, some things that I just haven't worried about in the past. And, you know, sometimes we can get wrapped up in analysis of stuff that, you know, and I just always tell women, yeah, there's organizations out there that aren't going to give you a second look because you're female, but there's plenty of organizations that will. And, you know, focus on those organizations, focus on those opportunities, not on the barriers. And, you know, that's just sort of where my thought process has always been. And, you know, has seemed to work out. So yeah, I mean, you know, a responsibility, not, I don't feel like I need to, you know, to go out and be like women's advocate, but yeah, I do feel the responsibility. I email everybody back that emails me or, you know, Facebook messages me or whatever, and just try to give them whatever insight and advice I can. And, you know, a lot of times it's just nice to reach out and touch base and know you're not the only person dealing with stuff.
Definitely. So there you go. Female students or professionals listening, reach out to Sue and
email Sue. I'm gonna have a thousand.
There you go. She will guide you forward. Yeah, I mean that those are good points. You know, I sometimes wonder if it's you know, we've talked about that. You know, as a profession, we're fairly passive as is, and I wonder if there's even more so related to females than males. And I remember reading studies in negotiation in salaries, and that males usually will get a higher salary because they will actually ask for it. Well, whereas a higher percentage of females never really bring it up, or once it's proposed, they're much less likely to counter and actually negotiate things like that. So it's, you know, it's definitely a fascinating topic, and I'm sure some people can use different adjectives aside from fascinating, but it's an evolving thing that I hope changes in the positive direction, because I think it only helps everyone.
Yeah, agreed.
So we covered a whole bunch of topics, from getting into sports and DPT student advice to female-male gender equality. So
it's solved. Problems.
Yeah, yes. I mean, if we don't get stuff solved on this podcast, I don't know what else to say. On Twitter, your name coming up, and a lot of people talking about, you know, congrats on the awesome shoulder DVD and the shoulder program. So for the love of God, please tell me what this awesome shoulder program is and shoulder DVD.
It is my first DVD, so I'm pretty fired up about it. It came out today, so, you know, there's links all over social media for you to follow. But yeah, it was exciting, you know, working with Larry Draper You know, she's done publications for Gray Cook and Mark Chang and Charlie Weingroff and, you know, obviously just some amazing leaders in our field and, you know, have just, it was just awesome to be able to work with her and to kind of see the amazing works that she does. And so it was just fun. She's been on me to you know, do a book or a DVD for years. And so she finally corralled me and I'm excited about it. It's fun. We did it at my yoga studio and I'm proud of it. It came out well.
That's exactly who I saw now that you mentioned it. Gray tweeted out, you know, congrats to you on the shoulder DVD. So what actually is it? What do you cover? A specific link that people can find it at.
Yeah. The first disc really covers, you know, anatomy, movement stuff, sort of the, general compensations and common compensatory patterns that we often see at the upper quarter, and sort of how that translates into shoulder pain, or shoulder dysfunction. And, the second DVD really goes into my absolute favorite upper extremity exercises that I like to use for a variety of different diagnoses or different movement dysfunctions. So the first DVD is definitely more kind of talking, and the second DVD is super practical and demonstrates the exercises that I like and goes through coaching cues and you know, things to look for and all that sort of stuff. So it's a nice combination of a little bit of lecture and a little bit of demo, and I think hopefully gives people some insight into kind of what I've been working on the last few months.
That's really cool. Now, is there any way we can set something up as a special for our Therapy Insiders listeners to get the DVD?
I am sure there is. Let me talk with Laurie, and I'm sure we can get some type of a link going and get that all hooked up. So we can definitely talk with Laurie about that.
Excellent. So there you have it. We'll post all the information on the therapyinsiders.com website that has the link to Sue's shoulder DVD. What's the title of it?
You know what? Amazingly, it's called The Shoulder. I know.
Mind
creative.
Blown. Well,
look for a review. Yeah, look for a review of The Shoulder on themanualtherapist.com. Yeah. It's everything you need to know about the shoulder. It's all encompassing.
There you go. I can't wait.
Athletes and beyond.
Yes, the DVD is on its way to my business. So.
And it's two DVDs.
Oh, yes. It is the DVD set, I should say.
There you go.
Yes.
So we'll definitely post all that on the website. Thank you for everyone that contributed questions on Twitter. And all right, now for real, closing thoughts.
I gotta get my DVD. I gotta go on and see about the shoulder. I'm glad. I appreciate you coming on, Sue. And it's interesting to go into and see all the different worlds of PT that are out there, and to see your perspective from the elite level. I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate you guys touching base and wanting to chat for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You got anything else?
Yes, it was great to hear Buffalo native make it so far. obviously with some more successful probably sports teams than we have here.
This is the year of the Buffalo Bill, Erson. Come on.
Yes, every year is the year of the Buffalo Bill, right?
But you guys really need
you guys need a group hug right now. I mean,
we do.
Just accept it. I think the shoulder DVD will be more successful than your Buffalo Bills.
Did I cut out again? I basically just said that. Wait, am I live? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just said that, yeah, every year is the year of the Buffalo Bill, and every Monday, all my patients are feeling worse.
They just come in with their heads down. Hey, or
Yeah, basically. Oh, yeah, gosh. My back is killing me, basically, from screaming and who knows what.
You know, you might as well just rename them from the Buffalo Bills to the Buffalo Charlie Browns, because that football is just going to get moved every time.
Yeah, it will be.
That is mean. I will not partake in this conversation.
Too late.
Go Buffalo Bills. That'll be my final thought.
So thanks so much for joining us. I mean, we've covered the gamut of everything. And if our listeners want to find you, follow you, again, we'll post the shoulder on the website, but any social media stuff, anything that you want to throw out there?
Yeah, super creative in my social media handles. Basically, Sue Falsoni or Sue Falsoni PTATC is the way to find me.
There you go. What about the needling course?
Systemicdryneedling.com is your source of information there.
There you go. So again, thank you for listening. Thank you for contributing to the conversation. It's been really cool, as always, getting more and more people conversing and just, you know, getting this thing to spread, because obviously we record this and put it out there and it doesn't really do anybody any good if people don't spread the word and just start discussing what we talk about. So I think that's the coolest thing, and I hope we keep it going. So you can find me at Therapy Insiders for the podcast, Urson at the OMPT, Joe at JoeDPT on Twitter. Email therapyinsiders@gmail.com with questions, comments, keep them coming. And please, you know, go to iTunes and type in Therapy Insiders, leave us a comment or a review. It really helps us out a lot to keep climbing in the charts so we can keep getting some really cool guests. So again, Sue, thanks for joining us, and we hope we can chat a little bit more about some cool stuff you got coming on.
Thanks, Sue.
My pleasure. I hope so as well. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sue.